It's time for All Things Napa with your host, Lee W. Miller, a community leader, full-time realtor, and a serial networker passionate about promoting local businesses. Let's learn what's new in the Napa business scene today.
Good morning, Napa Valley. Lee W. Miller is not away. Lee W. Miller is here live in the studios at KVON and happy to be here on this January 29th, 2020. Welcome to the show and happy to have our regular featured guest, Bernie Narvaez, in the studio with us today, as well as, you know what time it is? It's tax time. And nobody likes tax time. Well, nobody except our other guest today, Tammy. Tammy is a tax expert from, she shakes her head no that she's not a tax expert, but from Nova Tax Consultant, and we are happy to have her in the studio today as well. This is All Things Napa. This is a show specifically designed to help promote local businesses. I am your host, and when I'm not behind this microphone, I am a full-time realtor. I love helping buyers and sellers acquire and dispose of their most valuable asset. It's a lot of fun compared to all the years that I was in the corporate world. So if there's ever anything that you have questions about real estate, I welcome a conversation. And I'm also a serial networker. I love to connect people in business, and that's why I founded Napa Business Advantage, a business referral group here. What's a little bit different about us is that we also do quarterly mixers to help raise funds for small nonprofits. Our next one's coming up on March 10th. If you have any interest in that, it's a fun event where we pour lots of wine and have bites and have lots of laughs and getting to know people. So you can always reach out to me at leewmiller@gmail.com about possible guest suggestions. Maybe you heard a guest on the show and you want to find out how to get in touch with them. That's what I'm here for, is to be able to connect you to those people. Quick promotion of some upcoming events. I'm also a Vine Trail board member, and we have our big event coming up on the 21st of March. That is a great a fun event, and I'm looking forward to BASH. That's the Appalachian St. Helena fundraiser for scholarships for the CIA Greystone. And then, of course, Bottle Rock coming up on Memorial Day weekend. Last but not least, who likes prostate cancer? Nobody likes prostate cancer. That's why we're having an event on April 25th. And it's going to be at the Napa Valley Distillery. So if you would like to help raise some funds to fight prostate cancer, I welcome you to reach out to me and learn more about that event as well. All right, before we get into talking to Tammy about taxes, our quick Napa nugget. This is actually a repeat, but you'd have to be a very dedicated listener to remember back when I shared this one. Of all the Napa Valley vintners, of which there are about 500 just in Napa County, 67% of them produce less than 5,000 cases a year. That is quite impressive. You know, we think of the big names, 67% are very small producers, and that is your Napa nugget for the day. And now it's time to introduce to all of you Tammy Patterson, Napa or Nova tax consultant. How are you?
Good. Thank you for having me back.
Get a little bit closer to the microphone.
Oh, we're going to do this again. Apparently, yes. I get quiet when I come in here.
I know that if you know Tammy, she's not normally quiet, but she seems to be right now. And that's kind of ironic because we're talking about taxes and you're passionate about doing people's taxes and helping them. And yet, you know, it's just you and I here. This and Bernie, it's just the three of us. We're all friends. We're just having a conversation.
And everybody in Napa listening in, and that's okay.
I hope everybody in Napa is listening. So
yeah, that would be nice.
But so we're going to skip some of the history of you because people kind of know you already. But tell us why do you like doing taxes so much?
I like doing taxes because I see taxes as a way to put all the pieces in place and come up with a beautiful picture in order to get the best results for the client. I don't see taxes as a series of forms, but I see it as people's life, financial life on paper. So you get to see those changes. You get to see that growth. You get to see sometimes that struggle that people are going through and sit down and help them come up with a game plan to get to that next place. Sometimes it's a young couple and they've had some financial struggles. They've gotten a 1099 cancellation of debt. And you can see that they had a rough time last year. What needs to change in order for them to move to that next place? How can you encourage or help support them, you know, so that they can find that new job if they lost their job? Local community members that might have people hiring, and bring all of that together in one place. Or if it's a couple that they're done with college, they've got some student loans, but they basically are done paying them. They're like right there. They're making decent money and they've been renting for the last 4 years. You know, it's time for them to buy a home. Sit there and look at it.
So you guide people through all of those different scenarios just with your tax advice. You're not just processing their returns. You're actually providing them a little insight and advice on how they can improve their financial position.
Correct. Correct. Because you see it first when you're doing a tax return. You shouldn't be just dropping off forms and then coming back without a conversation with that person preparing your taxes and thinking you're getting the best results. Because honestly, the person doesn't know what's changed in your life from last year to this year. They don't know unless you tell them. So when somebody's doing your taxes, they should be asking you questions as to what's changed, what's going on, making sure that you have everything, looking at what you had the year before and seeing, is there something missing? A lot of times people get letters from the IRS because they're missing a document. It might be an interest for like $50. Oh, it's $50. What does it matter? But that $50 missing on the return opens a can of worms, because now they're going to look at everything else. And if they catch the error before you catch it, they will remove all your credits that you may have received. So
being the IRS.
The IRS, yes. They'll remove them.
You probably say they all the time, and because of your occupation, you just assume everyone knows.
I do, and
that
it's terrible.
They is the IRS.
Yes, the IRS is the ones that will review everything. And sometimes it's the state. You know, the state of California, the Franchise Tax Board, will also review things. So the IRS may not catch it, but the state will. If you have to fix one return, you have to fix them both. You have 10 days to submit to the opposite. So you got to make sure they're done and done timely. This year is going to be very, very scary for a lot of people in the area because we've had quite a few offices close. So they're going to be looking for new places to go.
So tax preparers that have been in business for a long time, just over the last year, several of them have closed, and those people have no place to go except Nova Tax Consultant.
Well, I would hope, but, you know, there are other companies that are there, and but we did lose quite a few. I think we lost about 5 offices.
Wow.
To
that's
going to
be a tremendous
death
impact.
Or retirement or illness. And it's had me nervous because I want to be the peace for people when they come in, knowing that I'm there for them, that it's not about me, it's not about my company, it's about them and putting them first.
I can't help but think, because, you know, you always hear the different strokes, different folks. I mean, doing taxes, I would sooner stick a pencil in my eye and enjoy it than do what you do for a living. So I love the fact that you do what you do and you're good at it. But what is ironic to me is that you have such a huge heart for all of your clients, and you get to know them on such a personal level because, as you've just stated, it's part of processing their returns properly. And for something that, from my perspective, is so cold and stagnant as numbers and tax returns, and yet you breathe life and warmth and love into every tax return. And it almost sounds corny. Maybe not almost, maybe fully corny, but I've seen you interact with people, and it's really cool what you do. And it reminds me of, no business would go to an advertising agency or to a marketing firm and say, I want your services, and expect that they're going to create a campaign, marketing or advertising, without having that in-depth conversation and getting to know the client and what their objectives are, what their style is, what it is that they do. And so you kind of do that in taxes, because you have to know, like you say, what happened last year, changes in your life, what changes do you anticipate going forward, marriage, divorce, buy, sell house, all these, you know, babies, all these different things are
taking
going to...
Taking an elderly parent.
Right.
Or caring for them. I mean, there are a lot of people that's their situation. They might have an elderly parent that they're having to pay nursing home facilities and nurses and in-home care and all these things. It's expensive.
Right.
And then on top of that, they might have teenagers at home or college students that they're paying for. And people might look at that family and say,
what, millennials living at home? No, nobody does that.
Oh, no, of course not. You know, nobody's sitting in the basement playing video games at 30 years old anymore, you know? It happens. But the thing is that we have a lot of people going through this. We have a lot of people that other people look at them and say, oh, they make a lot of money, so they can afford all of this. The truth is that everything is relative. If you make a lot of money and you're paying nursing home care and you're paying for kids in college, more than likely you didn't get financial aid for those kids because you make a lot of money. So you have all these expenses going out, and you might have a lot of income, but you have a lot of expenses. So that doesn't mean you have a lot of money. It means you're breaking even, maybe.
Right.
Maybe.
Well, that's just human nature.
Right.
We all typically live to our income level and not cap it at some point.
And sometimes it's beyond our control, like if a parent gets ill.
Right.
But the thing is that, you know, people have asked me, well, do you sell anything in your office besides doing taxes? Because that'll help you generate revenue. No, I don't sell anything. You know what I sell? I sell me. I sell my employees, because the truth is for somebody to want to work with you, they have to know you, they have to like you, they have to trust you. There are people who aren't going to like me. I am out there at times, you know. There should be a warning label on my sites that say you are entering the office of a crazy woman from New York, you know, but because I'm not like anything most people have met. I just don't sit there looking at a piece of paper. I want to know who you are. Because I want to know you as well as you know me, so that you realize I'm just like you. I'm a real person. I'm not an expert. I just know how to find the answers, and I will look for them till I get the right answer for you.
All right. You can be humble. I'll say that you're the expert. So tell us a couple of, two things. Someone listening who maybe hasn't filed for 2 or 3 years, and I'm amazed at how many people fall into that category. And once you skip 1 year, the, you know, getting it back in order just seems such a monumental task. And yeah, that then you just don't do it again and again and again. And then it's so let people know that it's not that big a deal. You can fix that and it's not going to cost them an arm and a leg. And then also share some of the successes that you've had and what you've been able to do for some people.
I've had quite a few people that have come in with multiple years. You'd think 2 to 3. Oh, no, I've had people come in from 2008 to current, unfiled. And those are paper returns if it's before 2012 for my system. So I have to search for the forms. I have to get it all done. And they've gone to other people, and they were told, oh, it's going to be $500 per year because you're so late. And I look at them, and I'm like, with that many years, they can't afford to do that,
exactly.
Especially if they're making $37,000 a year.
Right.
It's not going to happen. That's probably 2 months of rent for maybe them to get it done. And so I really try hard to sit there and put the scenario into perspective for them as to what we need to do and tackle it 1 year at a time. When it's that old and it's maybe just a W-2, they shouldn't be paying $500. They're being punished enough with the letters they're getting and the fear that they're going through. So I'll charge them like $99 for those prior years. You total it up, it's still going to be a significant amount. But I let them know, as we're completed with the returns and we're filing them, you pay me for what's completed as we go so that it's manageable. Let's get you caught up. I get on the phone with them with the IRS. Let them know I don't charge for those phone calls. I don't charge, you know, to sit and meet with these people because that's adding insult to injury. But the thing is, I just want them to calm down and to know that it is going to be okay. It's baby steps.
Right.
And we'll take in one return at a time. We'll get the documentation that's missing. It's not always easy to get, but it's doable.
Right.
And once we do that and we get to those final returns, if there's a balance owed, we can make a phone call and help them resolve those balances. It might be a payment plan. If it's higher, it might be putting them in the direction of doing an offering compromise and negotiating with the IRS to get that resolved. Because there, when the issues begin to happen, a lot of people tend to become ostriches. They dig a hole, put their head in it, and then the sand starts blowing over, and then you just can't get out of that hole. I want to help them dig their way out.
So share with us some of the people that you've done that for and what the results have been. So.
Well, I have a very dear friend that didn't want to come to me because she was afraid of me knowing what was going on. And she went out and she saw a person out in Sonoma, and they're the ones who told her $500 per year. It was going to cost her a fortune. I did them all the returns. There were 5 years of returns. We got them done for $500. And then I had her do the offering compromise. It was so simple. She doesn't have a lot of complicated things. She has a simple job here in the area, one W-2. She was able to do the paperwork. I showed her where to go online to do the offering compromise pre-qualifier to see if she really did qualify. They had said she owed $23,000, I think. And by the time it was said and done and she started making those payments, it came down to $2,000 when they accepted what she had submitted to them.
Wow.
And so she saved a significant portion. Is that going to work for everybody? No. I've had people come to me and say, I'm really thinking about doing this, but yet they've got $80,000 sitting in a 401k and they owe $30,000. They're not going to accept it,
right?
Because they're going to want you to pull the money out of that 401k. Many times you just need to amend the returns, check them, see if they were done correctly. If they weren't, that's going to reduce those prior year balances and enable you to hopefully be able to pay that in a shorter amount of time.
And even if the debt stays high, you don't have to sell everything you own. You get on a payment plan, right?
Correct.
And, yeah.
So. And change what you're doing so that you begin to get refunds. Fix your W-4 so that they take more out of your paycheck. Withhold a little bit more if you can afford to. If it's a matter of, I can't afford to pay that because I'm overwhelmed with bills, I'm a financial coach through Dave Ramsey. We'll sit down and look at your budget. I won't charge you to do that because sometimes we don't even realize where we have the leaking faucet in our finances. So if we sit down together and go over things, maybe there's a way to do a rollover principle. Start paying off some of your credit cards so that you can reduce that and apply that money to that past due amount. There's always a way to fix the issue. It's just a matter of finding it. So I truly believe there are no problems. There are only solutions. You just have to find out how to get there.
Right. We're talking to Tammy Patterson, owner of Nova Tax Consultant. That's singular,
Nova.
But NovaTaxConsultant.com. If you are worried about the horrendous obligation that we all have, worry no more and reach out to Tammy. So, Tammy, you told me a while back of somebody that you got $16,000 back from because they hadn't filed in a while. Is that, am I getting the facts right?
Yes. They had a business partnership, which they had not filed the returns since the initial return. And it was 3 years worth of returns. The wife was disgusted and decided to file their personal returns, married filing separate, forced itemized to the tune of like $600. The standard deduction would have been higher than what she did. So she ended up getting very small refunds for those 3 years. When I was finally able to complete those returns for the partnership and get them filed and get a K-1 from there, I was able to refile, amend the personal returns for this family. And I don't think they truly believed me. It wasn't until he got the check, and it was actually $18,000. Oh. I found out, because the IRS does pay interest if they owe you money.
Wow.
So he got the return in, and he gave me a call and said, oh my God, it really happened. Thank you. That makes me feel good, knowing that, you know, I was able to help this family that was in need because they were struggling. And
in part because they did their own taxes.
She did her own, but he never filed the business side. Yes.
Wow.
So I was just above and beyond happy for them.
That's such a great success story. I think we should end it there. Tammy Patterson, Nova Tax Consultant. Reach out to her, or what's the best phone number if they don't remember NovaTaxConsultant.com?
888-NOVA-TAX. It's the easiest number to remember.
And you've only been in business for about a year, and
this
you
is
are...
our second year starting. Okay. So I'm really excited. It was scary making it through the first year as a new business owner. So I get that scary feeling you have when you're starting out, and how am I going to make it? I've been there. I still, to this day, it is scary because you are responsible for not only yourself, but your employees and for your clients, and you feel the weight of the world. But every time you have a success and you get to that next phase of being in business, it's worth it.
Absolutely. Truer words never spoken. Thank you very much, Tammy.
Thank you.
We're going to wrap it there. We're going to be back with Bernie Narvaez. And just like that, we are back. And now we know that we need not be intimidated by filing our taxes, because it's going to be okay. Isn't that right, Bernie?
That's right. It's going to be okay, especially if you have someone like Tammy in your corner.
Right. And it's also not intimidating to buy insurance.
No, it's not. And you have a professional helping you out through the process.
Absolutely. So, all right. So, Nova Tax Consultant, one more time, reach out to Tammy and she will fix all of the tax issues that you may have. And even, yeah, I don't, you know, maybe you don't have any tax issues, but you're not happy with your existing tax preparer. Give Tammy a shot and you will not be disappointed. All right, Bernie, before we jump into a bunch of topics, I wanted to do a quick real estate minute. You might find these interesting as a homeowner and someone who's plugged into the community about our housing woes here. So check out these stats. In 2007, Napa County had 1,110 listings for the year. 12 years later, in 2019, almost the same, 1,186 listings. What I found interesting with these statistics is other stats, such as the lowest sale, the highest sale, the average sale, the median prices. They're all very similar between 2007 and 2019. And then the average or the median prices recovered to the previous highs of 2006 in 2016. So some people say, hey, Lee, somebody asked me the other day, are we back to the level that we were before the big crash? Well, not only are we back, we're quite beyond that since we actually matched those previous highs, you know, 3.5, almost 4 years ago. So I found that really interesting because some people still think that we haven't returned to that level yet. In fact, our total sales volume for 2019 was $1.1 billion, billion with a B, versus $933 million for 2006. So, you know, stats can be manipulated and tell many stories. But all of this really means, if you weren't already aware, the real estate market is quite healthy and it's a good time to buy. Why? Because in 2008, when we had the crash, over 40% of the home loans were subprime loans. Now, less than 1% of all the mortgages out there are of the subprime category. So all that evidence says that we are in a very healthy market, and there is no indication to say that we're going to fall into some sort of a recession anytime soon. So ping me with any questions if you like talking real estate. Maybe you don't like talking real estate, but you have a question or two. LeeWMiller@gmail.com. Happy to have that conversation with you. And I'll even buy lunch if you want to. So, oh, Bernie's shaking his head on that one.
It's hard to say no to free lunch, especially here in Napa.
Yeah, well, and it's restaurant week, so you better hurry. I want to take advantage of the restaurant week free lunch. So, all right, Bernie, I really enjoy talking to you on the air because you are plugged into everything. Not only are you running for city council, you are a member of the GPAC. Tell us what the GPAC is again.
It's a general plan update. So the city of Napa is in the process of updating their general plan. So it's required by a state for each jurisdiction, each city to update, which is basically our business plan. What's going to drive our decisions for the next
20 years
when it comes to land use, circulation, which is traffic, housing, our economy, major decisions. And, you know, when certain decisions come across the city council that are outside the scope of the general plan, it requires an amendment, which is a majority vote, which is a long process to accept.
So I didn't realize, you said that this is a requirement by the state of California.
Correct.
That every city does this, or is it metropolitan areas?
It is
or counties?
What I understand is incorporated cities, and you have to have certain elements on there. We can choose to add more to that if we want.
So there's a minimum threshold requirement, yes. And then I would imagine the fact that we've got how many members on the GPAC?
15.
15 members. Maybe that's more than is the minimal required, or maybe it's based on population or.
Well, what I mean is the elements. So there's topics on the general plan that you have to cover. I don't know if it's the number in the GPAC is required by the state. I haven't considered that, but that's what the city council decided on appointing. And, you know, we're just getting to the initial draft for land use. So we're actually going to talk about, you know, what does the land use policy going to look like for the next 20 years? And this is just a preview. So the next meeting, it's going to be February 24th from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. So this is going to be a long meeting, probably the longest we've had, because it's going to be very critical on how this happens. It's going to be at the senior center.
That's just the 15 people, or is that open to the public?
It's a public meeting.
Okay.
It is subject to the Brown Act. So that means we have to post it. And it has to be a public access for the public to be there for public comment. So if you want to have, you know, any input, if you have any ideas, which I encourage always to have input, we won't know what you want unless you tell us.
Right.
And we have 15 people from diverse backgrounds, you know, really doing a lot of work, but we have 80,000 people in the city, you know, and we want to make sure that the general plan that we put in front of planning commission, city councils, is reflective of our needs.
Right.
And that's going to be more than input from 15 people.
Right. Even though there's good representation, but yeah, there's always other things that could be brought up.
Correct. I mean, we don't pretend to know everything. We're constantly trying to do outreach. You know, outside of just, you know, surveys, we're out in the community. I see the other members out there in the community in different groups, whether it's climate, whether it's with business owners and traffic, you know, or parks. There's a lot to consider in this general plan.
Okay. All right. What are some of the topics you want to cover today?
Well, I have a real estate question for you. So you said we're in a...
I'm sorry. We don't take calls from the outside.
Oh, man. No, well, look, I have several clients that say, you know, I want to buy a home, but I hear it's better to wait for later. And, you know, I've given some advice, but I'm not a realtor. So if you have somebody, you know what, I want to buy, but I hear it, I need to wait to for the it's going to come down or it's going to get cheaper. It's what when people are in a position to buy but decide to wait because they're getting different.
Because they think that there's a recession coming, because historically there's been price reductions and ebbs and flows, and that typically happens about every 10 years. Well, it already has happened. So it just wasn't a big crash. And because everyone has in their mind this memory of 2008, they think, oh, that's going to happen again, and then I'm going to pounce on the market. Well, it pretty much happened over the last 12 to 18 months. But it wasn't a massive reduction. It was pretty much a flat line, or instead of a 4, 5, 6, 7% appreciation in values over the last 18 months, it's been more like a 1 or 2%. That's, in essence, a market correction that they've been waiting for, and they've been going through it. I can't say what the appreciation is going to be over the next 2 years, but it's not going to be negative. All the statistics, all the economics professionals. In fact, I just heard I can't remember his name now. Bob Iyer. He is a doctor. He's got a doctorate in economics. He teaches over at Sonoma State, and he came and addressed the MLS, the realtors, last Thursday. Really great dynamic speaker that spoke very quickly and gave us tons and tons of information. And in summary, he said, I don't see any signs of any kind of a recession, at least until 2023. So we're good for 2 or 3 years.
Okay.
So.
Because what I told him was, if you're in a position to buy and you can afford it, buy the home if you can afford it.
Right.
You know.
The other thing I like to say to people is, and I look forward to getting that referral from you too, but the other thing I like to remind people is, who buys a home with a 2 or 3 year exit strategy? Real estate is a long-term hold. So even if this doctor of economics and all of the indicators, even if those are all wrong and there was a price reduction over the next 2 years, unless you're planning on selling in 2 years, what you really want to think about is long-term, 5, 10, 15, 20 years, real estate is going to go up, and you're not going to gain any appreciation from renting, but you will in real estate by owning.
Wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. So one issue that keeps coming up throughout the community, especially through the general plan, and what's in, on the top of people's head right now is the homeless issue. I mean, I've seen an increase, and at least visually, with homeless activity, even just right down the street from here, going over the bridge here on the Imola. If you look over next to the river, you start to see the trees.
If you're at the stoplight south on Coombs, waiting to cross and turn left onto Imola, you look to your left, to your east, and you see warning, no camping allowed. And yet you see blue tarps and tents all over down there by the river.
Yeah, you know, I was talking to several people about this, and it's like, how do we address this? And there's so many layers to this. There's no magic solution to this. It's going to take a lot of resources. You know, it's going to take wraparound services, and one city alone can't do it. You know, earlier this month, our governor Newsom talked about a budget over $1 billion, with a B, to address homeless issues. So that means about $750 million will go to local cities, jurisdictions, to address this issue. So, you know, it's talk to your local leaders to make sure that we get some of that funding to address the issues here, because we don't have enough beds to help the people that are out living outside. You know, and I was talking to police officers, hey, what happens? Can you look at different scenarios on addressing this issue? If you tell somebody to leave, you know, can you legally do that? Well, if they're public property, you can't do that unless there's available bed.
I recently read that it's against the law to tell somebody that they can't stay somewhere if they have no other place to go, if it's public property.
Yeah, if it's public property.
Right.
You know, and they're aware of that. They don't go to private property because you can be removed, but you go to public property, there's not enough beds. So, you know, it's not good for anybody. It's not good for them. It's not good for environment. It's not good for public. You know, but there are different types of homelessness. You have people that are, you know, under substance abuse. There's people with mental health illness, and there's a low amount. It's rare that somebody, you know, it's a paycheck away, from what I hear. That's easier to manage that. But what's hard is the chronic homelessness.
Right.
Somebody that doesn't want to be housed, and figuring out what's the root of that issue. And it's about figuring out how to help them. If it's detox, then what do we have in place? How can we get some of that $750 million to help those people so they can, you know, hopefully come back to their community and be a contributing member and not having to live out there? And different communities have done so many, you know, have tried different things. Oakland, I was reading an article that Oakland has tiny homes, and they've said that this has helped them to get back into regular housing and on a, you know, regular job and back into the world. Other places, not so much. You know, I went to Oakland and was getting off the freeway into downtown Oakland, and just garbage everywhere.
Right.
You know, and you can see that the encampments moved because it was raining, so they were moving to other covered areas, but there's garbage everywhere. You know, so it's, how do you address this issue? It's not a magic solution, but
right. It's
going to have to be creative, and it's going to take a lot of funding to do it.
Well, and there are so many that don't want to change. They, you know, you can offer them all kinds of things, and they refuse it. When I volunteered at the table here, I've done that a few times, serving the homeless, and even talking to one homeless person, Gail. I've gotten to know her, and I said, Gail, why do you stay out here on the street? Why don't you go to one of the shelters? And she just said that she gets stolen from, and she's not comfortable there. I think she's moved on because no one has seen Gail for quite a while, and she had told me that she wants to go to Florida, so I'm hopeful that that's where she is. But with all of that money that Governor Newsom has allocated, how much of that is actually going to really help transition people who want the help versus the people who, like you say, substance abuse or mental health issues, no amount of money is going to help them. And then when there's so much money that Newsom has allocated to this problem, word gets out, and the people that are in other states were going to, oh, there's a free bed for me for as long as I want. Not only does that damage their self-esteem, because we're not helping them get back into society, we're just giving them something. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people that will just take it and be completely satisfied. And then that makes the problem even worse.
It can, but you have a better chance of helping somebody if they have shelter than helping somebody out in the tent. So when somebody comes, when you have somebody that you're able to house, if they have some, you know, they're going to have possibly some serious issues, but your chances of helping them, of being case managed, even if it's slightly, increases the chances tremendously from somebody out there, you know.
Oh, I completely, completely agree. But if the help is known to be from the time it begins, okay, we're going to help you for a year. And during that year, the expectation that we have for you is X, Y, and Z, and that you stay sober, and that you go to these classes, and you develop some skills so that you can get, you know, and there's conditions that are part of that assistance, I think that's going to yield a better long-term result rather than here you go, and now there's this indefinite aid where now you have three meals and a roof over your head, but no real plan to move on beyond that particular spot.
I mean, it's a very interesting conversation to have, and how we can provide the services, because some people may not become a contributing member of our community as far as getting a job, but do we say, well, we can't help you, so there's no bed?
Oh,
for
I'm
you.
Not. I'm,
no, no, I'm not saying you are, yeah. But some people out there think this. So think, you know, out of sight, out of mind, until because I'm problem. And now there's more and more people. I was talking to somebody recently, and I said, you know, what do we do with people that come to Napa that are homeless versus people that live here? And it's the same thing. You can't discriminate. So then I proposed, I said, well, maybe all the counties need to be on the same program, the same page. So not each county is fighting for funding, but this funding is evenly distributed based on homeless population. So if we only have 200 beds and Oakland has 2,000 beds, and we have people coming here from other cities, or we don't have enough beds here, then we know, okay, you know what? Oakland has 10 beds. We'll transfer them over there, or vice versa. So I think that we can do better throughout different counties to address this. You know, I mean,
as opposed to the silos, every county right. is a silo.
Yeah, because we have 200 beds, we have 500 homeless. I mean, that's not the numbers. I'm just throwing it out
right.
there. Well, then,
so I think it's actually 300.
It's 300.
Yeah.
Yeah. So whatever the number is, I mean, we should be able to work with other counties and get people out of the street. One is it's not good for them. It's not good for community. There's a safety issue to that, public safety, when you're dealing with someone with mental health illness. And also the perception of our community with, you know, what they think of the homeless. Right. Some people are just nice. They just don't want to don't want to follow the rules and live in, you know, traditional society. But we have to we have to do a little bit better than what we're doing now.
Right. All right, let's change subject. I want to talk about Measure K. I want to get your opinion of it. I've read the article in the Register. I understand what the objective is. Tell me what your thoughts are on it.
Well, I'll tell you that when I served as a commissioner of Parks and Rec with the city of Napa, a lot of that, some of the issues were funding. You know, how do we provide better services to our community? How do we improve parks, access to trails? So that's always been an issue. And but the thing is that the one department that really focuses on quality of life and entertainment is Parks and Rec. So we have a chance to enhance those services, and it's only going to come back to improve our quality of life, right? It's not just a bomb for infrastructure. This is safety in parks, you know, activities for children, for families to play together, and trails and open space. So when we're talking about, it overlaps with our housing issue too, because we only have so much land. So we have to have a balance between how much we develop and how much we save for our future generations. So I think this would help create that balance. And also, I mean, there's checks and balances because there is an independent citizen oversight. And that's why I really like, there's two things that really got my attention. This is why I'm supporting it. It's the independent citizen oversight, right? So it's not just one department without, some departments don't have the citizen oversight. It just goes to either the elected in that jurisdiction, but this does have that. And there's annual audits of financial, so we can hold them accountable, make sure they do what they're supposed to do.
Well, we're talking to Bernie Narvaez, excuse me, and we're talking about Measure K. I'm glad you brought that up because I was not aware of that. And my interpretation is that the vast percentage of the funds raised by the 0.25% tax increase, sales tax increase, is to acquire more land to be set aside and preserved forever, not necessarily to enhance park and recreation services for families. So is that going to be part of the citizens' oversight, or is there percentages and allocations for land acquisition, for preservation, and for services, or is that entirely up to the governing body?
Good question. So the way I understand it is funds is for you know, preserving land and acquiring land to preserve for future generations. And part of the funding will go to local jurisdictions. So every city will get some funding for their local parks and rec. But I believe the majority will go to preserving land, acquiring land to preserve for future
generations. Okay, so it is majority for acquiring and preserving.
That's well, there's other, I don't know the exact breakdown.
Right.
But there's also managing the forest to prevent, you know, to help with fire management. So there's protecting the watershed. So acquiring some of the land for the watershed, for future water. We don't know what our water situation is going to be in 20 years. I mean, I've heard about, and this is a phrase that may be unpopular, that is unpopular now, toilet to tap, right? I mean, if you haven't done a walkthrough through our Napa Sanitation District, I really recommend it. And we have the Genesee Water Treatment Plant not too far away. At some point, those two are going to be connected, right? We can't just rely on the natural water that we have. We have to be able to utilize and recycle what we have with as technology develops to rely less and less on Mother Nature.
You said toilet to tap, not tap to toilet.
Correct.
I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah.
People were not saying, "Oh, he mixed that up."
No.
He went backwards.
No. I mean, that's something that's been discussed for years. I think there's a pilot program, Southern California, and next time I come on, I'll bring that up. I'll talk about that in more detail. You know, I'm just connecting the dots of right. What's going on.
So that's good. The management for fire and all of those things is, you know, and I'm not I'm just playing devil's advocate here.
Sure.
There are probably some people listening that are saying, yeah, all sounds good, but it's never really managed properly. And then the money just flitters away and it's all going to be used to acquire more land and preserve it, which is not necessarily a bad thing. But I wonder how much of our land is, what percentage of Napa County is already in that preserved state, and whether or not we need more housing or we need more land preserved, and where is that balance?
Well, the housing is really up to the local incorporated cities, you know, Napa, Santa Lena, American Canyon, Calistoga.
Yeah, but
I think
Napa
that,
just expands their city limits.
Well, that's not going to happen for at least 20 years. The RUL is not going to expand, at least not with, it's not going to be the advice, the recommendation of the general plan committee, you know. So we're going to work within the boundaries, the current boundaries.
No, I realize that, but my point is Napa Pipe, you know, whether it is now or it will be incorporated into the city limits. And so, yeah, I understand that it's a city issue, but Napa seems to just expand where needed so that it becomes a city service rather than a county.
Yeah, so they're going back to the balance of having preserving, the balance of preserving our nature versus, you know, our growth. I think it's good to have a healthy balance. But also, if for those people that are concerned about this, you know, that's where the independent citizen oversight committee comes in.
Right.
You know, we have to hold them accountable. It's not just blank check, right? Although some people have that perception, we have to hold people accountable. Make sure that if this funding is supposed to go for that, make sure it's done properly.
Right. Man, we ran out of time really, really fast, and there's so many other things that we want to talk about. So we will do that the next time that Bernie Narvaez is on this program. That's it, folks. Remember to live your life every day as if your legacy matters, because it absolutely does. We'll talk to you next week.